There's a story of a 4-year-old boy who was going on a trip with his mother. And they were in the car for quite a while, and he started out repeating this question again and again that I'll bet some of us who have traveled with children have heard. And it was, "Mom, Mom, how many more miles? When are we going to get there? When are we going to get there?" Anybody ever hear that from kids? Very common, yes. And Mom had just about had all she could take. And finally she said to him, "Bobby, we have 90 more miles to go, and I do not want to hear another time from you. Where are we going to get there?" So that worked. He was quiet for a while in the back seat. And then all of a sudden, this timid little voice came up to the front saying, "Mom, Mom, will I still be 4 years old when we get there?" So today, we're going to begin a new series highlighting stories of some of the women in the Bible. And our first story is about a woman who had a long wait for something that she really desired, and like our 4-year-old boy, she runs out of patience. Her name is, in the beginning, Sarai, later to be called Sarah, and she appears early in the book of Genesis. She is the wife of Abram, who will become the first patriarch of Judaism. Sarai is mentioned in the Bible more times than any other woman. In fact, more times than Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, Sarai and Abram are originally from the city of Ur, which in the day was a thriving metropolis in southern Mesopotamia, and what is in now modern-day Iraq. Archaeology estimates that there were 24,000 residents living in Ur at the time that this story is believed to take place, and that would be about between 2000 and 3000 BCE. What's known as the call of Abram in the Bible takes place in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. One day, God appears to Abram and says to him, "Leave your country and your people and your father's household and go to a land that I will show you." And then he goes on, "I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so there will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." Now, some biblical scholars believe that the original language was, "By you all the families of the earth shall bless themselves." Interesting twist on it. And so God calls Abram. He was a nomad leader originally from Ur. He is called to go forth to an unknown land to start a new nation, a nation that would worship the one true God. Now, you have to really get the context of what religion was like in the day. Artifacts reveal that the people of Mesopotamia worshipped multiple gods, totally polytheistic cultures, and the chief god in Ur was the moon god Nanna. Unlike the later story of God speaking to Moses and calling Moses, in this case, we don't get to hear Abram's response. There's no dialogue from Abram. However, the text simply says, "So Abram went as the Lord told him. He took his wife Sarai and all their possessions and all the people they had acquired and left their homeland." Now, it's interesting for us to know that at the time of their journey, Abram was 75 years old and Sarai was about 10 years younger. We're told two other things about Sarai. One, that she is exquisitely beautiful, with a beauty that does not fade with age. And secondly, we are told that she is barren. The exact text says she had no child. Now, being without child in antiquity was always considered, not surprisingly, the woman's problem. Okay? In fact, it was believed that childlessness was evidence of a curse from God on the woman for some sin that she must have committed. Bible scholar Dr. John Byron notes that the childless woman in the Hebrew Bible was among the most despised and estranged people in all of the society. And God's promise that Abram will establish a great nation with all of these people in it is in stark tension to Sarai's barrenness. And much of the rest of the story revolves around that tension. It's really a very long story. We're only going to hit the highlights. Okay, so in this context, we have Sarai and Abram showing great faith and heading out to the unknown land. They leave Ur, which is at the bottom portion of the screen on the right, on your right, and travel up to Haran. Now, when they arrive in Haran, Abram gets instructions once again from God, this time to go to nearby Canaan, a land that God promises to Abram and his descendants. Once again, Abram does exactly what he's told. He follows directions well. He takes Sarai, and they go to Canaan, and they build two altars there to invoke the name of the one true God. Remember, in a time where everybody else is worshiping multiple gods. However, at this point, the plot thickens. The text reads, "Now there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to reside there as an alien, for the famine was severe in the land." What happens next is not the behavior you might expect from the first patriarch. In fact, I'm going to read it directly and show you the words on the screen so you know I didn't make it all up, okay? It is pretty extreme. All right. "When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, 'I know well that you are a woman beautiful in appearance.'" Now, isn't that something we might like to hear from a spouse or partner? You don't want to hear what comes next, though. Okay. "Then he says, 'And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. So say you are my sister, so that all may go well with me because of you, and my life may be spared on your account.' When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. When the officials of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, he dealt well with Abram, who was given sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female slaves, female donkeys, and camels. So Sarai is taken into Pharaoh's house as a concubine, and Adam prospers. Such is gender equity in antiquity," right? But this time, God is not happy. So he sends a plague onto Pharaoh's house. And when Pharaoh discovers Abram's deceit, he says, "Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife, take her and be gone." So they're kicked out of Egypt. After they return to Canaan, Adam is once again promised by God that he will found a great nation. At one point, God takes Abram outside and says to him, "Look toward the heavens and count all the stars if you can. So shall your descendants be, as many descendants as there are stars in the sky." But despite all these divine assurances, Abram's faith begins to falter because neither he nor Sarai is getting any younger. And we'll pick up Sarai's story. Up to this point, it's kind of sounded like Abram's story, but we're going to pick up Sarai's story in Genesis 15, verse 16. "Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, bore no children. She also had an Egyptian maidservant, in some versions say slave girl, she would have been a slave, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Adam, 'See now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing children.'" There's that idea that it was a curse from God. "Go into my maid, it may be that I shall obtain children by her." This is definitely not a G-rated story, okay? "And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan," which would make him how old? 85. You all are good. 85. "Sarai took Hagar, the Egyptian girl, and gave her to her husband, Abram, as a wife. He went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt upon her mistress." Now it's Sarai's turn not to be happy. OK? okay? Clay tablets found from the Near East confirm that this was really a common practice in the day, but Sarai did not expect to be looked down upon by her slave, and seeing Hagar pregnant with her husband's child was just more than she could bear. So jealous of Hagar and her pregnancy, Sarai mistreats her, and Hagar escapes into the wilderness. But God sends an angel to tell her to return, and her unborn child will have many offspring. This he says to Hagar. So Hagar returns, gives birth, and names her son Ishmael, meaning God hears. And as you all just said, Abraham is 85 years old when Ishmael is born. Now, 13 years later, this is a long car ride, okay? 13 years later, God promises another son, this time to Abram and Sarai together. And this is from chapter 17 in Genesis verse 1. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared and said to him, I am God Almighty, El Shaddai. Walk before me and be blameless. Now, in some of the versions, it says, walk before me and be ye perfect. Jesus always was quoting the Hebrew Bible that he knew as a child, and this is where the origin of that line came from. Walk before me and be ye perfect, and I will make my covenant between me and you, and will make you exceedingly numerous. Here comes the lots of children piece again. Then Abram fell on his face and said to him, as for me, this is my covenant with you. You shall be the ancestor of a multitude of nations. Now, God says after this, no longer shall your name be Abram, but your name shall now be Abraham. For I will make you the ancestor of a multitude of nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of you, and kings shall come before you. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your offspring after you. And I will give to you and your offspring the land where you are now an alien, all the land of Canaan for a perpetual holding, and I will be their God. Sarai shall bear you a son, and you shall name him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him also as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. And then God said to Abraham, now Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall no longer call her Sarai, but you shall call her Sarah. I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she will rise to nations. Kings of peoples shall come before her. Now, we've said before that name changes in the Bible always represent a character rising to what? What do you know? Higher consciousness, a higher spiritual place. And Abram, meaning exalted father, becomes Abraham, meaning father of nations or father of multitudes in some versions. And Sarah is the only woman in the entire Bible who receives a new name. So that makes her really unique. Sarai in Hebrew meant bitter, contentious, dominating, and quarrelsome. Not very attractive language, is it? Her new name, Sarah in Hebrew, means princess and noble woman. And what do you think Abraham and Sarah do when they hear the Lord's prediction about having a son? What would you guess? Rejoice? No? Some of you know the story. What did they do? They laughed. They laughed. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born to him that is almost 100 years old? Can Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? Sarah laughs also. Shall I indeed now bear a son at this age? And God challenges them both, saying, why did Sarah laugh? Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? So just as predicted, finally, at 90 years old, Sarah conceives and has a son. And their son is named Isaac, which in Hebrew means laughter. Yeah, and he would, the stories show that he always was a child of joy and jubilation. And in case you're wondering, those of you who don't know the story, Ishmael is also protected by God. And today in Islam, he is considered a prophet and an ancestor of Muhammad. So that's the connection to Islam. What an incredible story, huh? With a few twists and turns we didn't even talk about, Lot's in the story and Lot's wife that turns into the pillar of salt, and there are many other details in the story. A couple wars are thrown in. However, Sarah's story begins in chapter 12 and ends in chapter 23. It's a really long story, and it ends with her death at 127 years old. And Abraham purchases the land in Canaan for her to be buried in, which is the birthright of the Jewish people to that land, that he's now a landowner in Canaan. Sarah becomes then the great matriarch of the Jewish people. And so, as many of you know, in Unity, we accept the Bible as a book of history, a moral and ethical teaching, a great literary work. We find in it much sacred inspiration, and we know that it's a complex collection of writings that were compiled over many centuries. Also, we find deep spiritual significance in that. We know that it gives us metaphysical representation of our own soul's journey. And so we look at all the characters and the events, no matter what they do or don't do, and all the places, and we ask ourselves, what can they teach us about ourselves, about our own soul's unfoldment? So what in the world can we learn from this story about Sarai becoming Sarah? Well, from the very beginning, Sarai went with Abram on the journey to Canaan, didn't she? She was by his side through the whole journey. Metaphysically, women in the Bible represent the feeling nature that is part of man's being. So together, the two of them together, the male energy of intellect and the feeling energy of Sarai, the emotional energy, together show us, according to Elizabeth Sand Taylor in Let There Be Light, show us that if we aspire to move to a new land, representing higher realization of truth, higher spiritual consciousness, then we must be willing to give up all of those things that we left behind. How many of you have ever moved? Okay, you don't just pack up everything you own and move, do you? It's a time we all purge and we all give away and we all try to kind of pare down. And so when we hear the words that Abraham heard, go from your country and your family and your father's house to the land that I will show you, that call is our call also. We cannot rise higher in spiritual consciousness when we allow ourselves to be tethered by the old stuff, the old embedded ideas about God, ourselves, our purpose, and our destiny. We cannot embrace oneness, knowing that we are one with God and all other human beings, until we let go of that idea of that puppeteer God up in the sky, separate from us and pulling our strings. We can't fully align with the Christ of our being when we cling to the idea that everything is inflicted upon us as reward or punishment by an arbitrary God. We need to move away from all those beliefs and not look back. You remember what happened to Lot's wife when she looked back, right? She turned into a pillar of salt. And we have to do that also. We have to just turn around and move forward in order to behold God as the creative power and life force of the universe, and to behold ourselves as made in God's likeness and image. We move away from seeing ourselves as less than in order to have the audacity to believe that it is our mission to be all we can imagine God to be. Turner says, our destiny is heaven, not a place of bliss that we go after death, but a consciousness of oneness with God. This comes when we are disciplined, purified in mind, lifted by God's grace, and our own effort to work through the creative process. Then we feel like new beings, and we are ready to enter the new land. So what does all that time in Egypt and that bizarre situation where Abram turns Sarai over to the Pharaoh, what is all that intended to show us? Well, for one thing, Abram and Sarai have the initial faith and courage to leave their old lives behind, and that's not easy, to follow divine guidance into that vast unknown. They were explorers, pioneers, you might say, and pioneers always face sometimes of discouragements, not ever just a smooth road. The Interpreter's Bible says they were seeking the promised land, but often the land seemed more full of disappointments than promise. There was not only the famine, there was the fact that Canaan was already occupied, there were wars, there were all sorts of conflicts in this journey. And so, as soon as they hear about the famine, one of the many conflicts, they head for Egypt. Did God ever tell them to go to Egypt? No. God tells them to go to Canaan, the promised land. So what was all that about? Well, metaphysically, Egypt represents physical human consciousness. And according to Charles Fillmore in Revealing Word, famine represents a lack of faith in God's power to prosper. Lack of faith in God's power to prosper is what sent them to Egypt. And why does Abram make that decision? I've already given it away here. Because of the four-letter word beginning with F, fear, right? He's afraid that because Sarai is so beautiful, that he will be killed for Sarai. It's all about fear. And we've said so often, haven't we, that fear is really false evidence appearing real. Just overreacting about things we see in the outer and not realizing there's a greater reality. And how many of us have been there? How many of us, absolutely, we all go down to Egypt, do we not? I mean, we do. We experience this consciousness of this great faith. We begin a new project, an exciting new adventure, and it feels so right. We're in this high spiritual place. And then the first negative-seeming barrier that's presented to us, what happens? Sometimes we fold like a cheap card table, do we not? I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, where was all that faith? It just seems to disappear. And the thing is, God, the true God, the one true God that gave Abram his initial instructions was still with him, always with him. But Abram turned his pivotal soul from the power and presence of God to the fear of losing his life, and the resulting actions were not pretty, as they sometimes are not when we do the same thing. And what is the message of the whole Hagar episode? Well, to Sarah's human sense, God's promise seemed impossible because she thought she was too what? Too old. That's exactly right. Now, I'm sure we can all think of things that we have really wanted, and we've prayed and prayed and faithfully waited for it to happen. But like that little four-year-old boy in the car, we lose patience, and sometimes we lose our faith. It falters, and we begin seeing with limited vision. Then we often will just take things into our own hands and try to force the outcome we desire. Has that ever happened to anybody in the room? Yes. Turner says we should learn to rest in the Lord, the great I am, and wait patiently for divine outcomes. If we try to demonstrate truth through our personal will and effort, we shall find that we have fallen short. And I might say, even if it seemed like such a good idea at the time. We just have to make sure that our intentions are aligned with Spirit. Yesterday, Carol Bullock bought a necklace, a frog necklace. Are you wearing it today? No, you're not. Okay, you'll have to wear it sometimes. Everybody can see you. So everybody at our table was sort of talking about what the frog acronym meant. And someone said it meant forever rely on God. And then we all agreed, really, it meant fully rely on God. That's what frog stands for. But Sandy Etheridge, in all her wisdom, said, you know, sometimes I think it's finally rely on God. After all else fails, after we give up everything in the outer, then we turn to God instead of the other way around. So I believe that we can learn much from Sarah's story. In spiritual symbology, Sarah, like all women, represents that intuitive part of humankind. And Charles Fillmore writes, as Sarai, or Sarai, I should say, the soul is in the process of realizing its rightful place in consciousness, of understanding that our emotions and our emotional center are in essence also divine. And all we have to do is align that with spirit instead of aligning it with material conditions. Sarah shows us the higher phase of our own souls. That's what her story's about. The unfoldment of divine ideas that are our birthright. From Sarah, we learn to stop struggling and trust divine order that is always with us, always unfolding. We learn to turn our pivotal souls from the worries and disappointments of the world to the truth that God is greater, and we have all we need, no matter what is facing us in the outer. We have all we need through the power of our indwelling Christ. And so once she learns her lesson, Sarah's dream is realized, and she gives birth to Isaac. And as we said, in Hebrew, Isaac means laughter. Metaphysically, he represents divine sonship, the joy of a new life in Christ, and the spiritual awareness of our oneness with God. And that's an important lesson. So let's take a moment now to really, before we move into prayer and meditation, to really affirm and feel in the depths of our being the great truth about our one true God. That there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together? There is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, God the good, omnipotent, and so it is.